Listener Production.
Coming up today, we talk the Battle of the Bridge, an enormous weekend in footy coming up. What do North Melbourne need to do to fix their cultural problems? A debut in the showdown, and is Chris Scott coaching a different game to everyone else? That's coming up on Footy Talk. Great to have you with us for Wednesday's edition of Footy Talk. It's where we look at the footy world a little differently than most. We look at it from the player's point of view. We give you the insight in what's happening behind the scenes and sometimes, not always, what it's like to be in the headlines as well. I'm Jack Heverin. I'm not feeling the best, to be truthful, and I blame Abby Holmes for that because we were in the studio last Wednesday, Abs, and I was feeling good and I've gone downhill since then.
Look, I had a little bit of a nasal thing last week, but I was all good. It didn't get a hold of me, but you haven't got out of bed for 3 days, so I apologise if it was me. But I tell you what, I'm up and about today. Outside, the weather is sensational, but you've missed the blue memo, so I'm sorry about that. Zacha and I are both wearing the blue. You've got your little checks on.
I know. Well, if you communicate with me and tell me these things, then I'll dress in the team attire next week. David Zaharakis, good to see you.
Good to see you. Now, I hope that doesn't come across the table to me because I've got a very important weekend coming up. So I hope I don't get any kind of nasally sickness from you.
Keep your distance.
Yes, I will.
We'll talk about your weekend very shortly as well because you've got some very cool stuff coming up. We've got a lot to get through today, but we always start the Wednesday show with our thought of the week. The new ball is yours, Abby Holmes.
The new ball. Bridge. The battle coming up this weekend. I cannot wait. And my thought of the week is behind GWS and Sydney and how great it is for the competition, how great it is for the AFL in New South Wales when these two teams are up and running. And we've got a second v third clash coming up this weekend. I love the theatre around it. We heard what Sam Taylor came out and said about the Swans and how they're a bit chirpy and Longmire. John was having absolutely no bar of it in his press conference. But that's for the players, isn't it, Zacha? Mm. Like, it's all well and good for you to come out and talk the talk pre-game, but now I'm excited for what we're going to see on field across round eight.
Well, you can say whatever you want during the week and sometimes like the Q clash as well and Battle of the Bridge. Players try to create a rivalry, which is great. I love that there's two Sydney teams in the comp, been here now for 10, 12 years, and both teams can say what they want, but then when it's actually the fire in the belly on game day, that's what we love. I want to put a question to you. Who do you think's owned Sydney in the last 8 to 9 years out of these two teams? Both have made a granny, both have made many prelims, lost prelims. Who do you think has owned Sydney?
It's a tough one, isn't it? You'd have to say the Swans, based on history as well.
Yep.
But it's just so exciting to know that GWS have come in to the competition the exact same time as the Gold Coast Suns.
Yep.
And what they've been able to produce over, when did they come in?
2012,
I want to say.
Yeah. Yep. So what, 12 years, as you've mentioned, they've played off in prelims, they've made grand finals. I'm so impressed with that organisation in general for what they've been able to do in such a short period of time. And on the other side of things, you absolutely applaud the Swans for being so competitive for a number of years as well. So that is a tough question without notice.
The other, I thought about that just then.
He's pretty happy with himself too. Look at that one. He started well. The other part to this is his second versus third.
Yes.
And I think that's any time that you've got a rivalry game, it's great. But like 2v3, to me, it does genuinely feel like they are two of the best three teams in the competition so far.
Well, how do you think this one's going
to
play out?
I've no idea.
Exactly,
to
right.
be honest.
And that's the best part about it, is that it's like toss of the coin. You don't know who's going to win this one.
I'm shattered it's a 1:45 time slot, to be honest. Yes, this should be a Saturday night, Friday night game.
Blockbuster. Fixed
blockbuster game. You get plenty of viewers in that. So that's what I'm shattered about, that it's there. But the other side of this weekend, we have a massive weekend of games coming up. So that's just not the only one. We've got the showdown Thursday night.
So this is your thought of the week.
This is my thought of the week.
What about a segue there from Zach? A bit of craft.
You've got to introduce it, though.
Wow. Yes. So my thought of the week. Well, I thought I could just have a smooth segue, but you just ruined it, man.
Ruined it for you. Sorry about that.
But this weekend, massive game. Showdown. So we've obviously got the Battle of the Bridge, the Q clash, and the showdown. Love that from the AFL that you put in three big rivalries. Could have had a derby in there as well, but a couple of weeks ago. And then you've also got Collingwood Carlton, Melbourne Geelong as well. Huge games this weekend. Which one are you both looking forward to out of all of them the most?
Well, I'm a South Australian girl, so I grew up in the two-team town, the Adelaide-Port Adelaide rivalry. So for me, it's Thursday night at Adelaide Oval. It's sold out. And Look, it's never really mattered where these two teams have been on the ladder. It's never mattered. And Adelaide have actually had the upper hand against Port Adelaide in recent years. So I cannot wait to get there. The hill is going to be absolutely popping off at Adelaide Oval.
Have you watched the game from the hill before?
Never.
Never. Okay.
Never.
I feel like that'd be a real experience for you.
I know, wouldn't it? Have you ever done it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it
very cool?
Very cool.
It's loose.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is why I think it'd be an experience for you.
I need to go and experience that.
I've never done it either. That'd be pretty
maybe
cool.
We should go to the
maybe,
hill.
Yeah, maybe we can go
Let's
together.
Let's book it in. It's a date.
Yeah. Do Channel 7 provide security for you when you...
Well, we do, yeah.
Yeah, well, you're going
to
need
it. Look, I think I would prefer to go and experience the hill whilst not working.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. That would be the way to go.
Yes, I think so.
Let me loose.
It's a very cool experience. Very cool for cricket as well, the hill.
Like, yeah.
A
day I on have the hill. Been on the hill for yeah. cricket.
It's very,
Absolutely.
Very cool. But you're right about this round. Like, it's loaded from top to bottom, isn't it?
When you think about it, Carlton Collingwood, they're tipping that potentially 93,000 plus, so beat Anzac Day, which would be in a huge game for a Friday night footy. Melbourne Geelong is one for me that I'm really interested in. Geelong undefeated. When are they going to lose? Are they going to lose? They still haven't beaten, you always that whole thing about they haven't beaten the top six or whatever, but I mean, they're beating everyone they're playing. So I'd love to see how Melbourne's defensive system works against Geelong, especially because it's at the MCG. So Geelong obviously love that skinny ground at home and now against Melbourne at the G. They obviously won there last week. So yeah, really interested in seeing that game and how Geelong can move the ball against Melbourne's defence.
You know, it's a big weekend of footy, right? As you mentioned, Carlton Collingwood on Friday night. My dad is coming over from South Australia with my stepmom. I could not get them a ticket.
What?
Couldn't get them
how?
A ticket. I tried every angle through Seven, through the AFL, nothing.
What?
Complete sellout.
Are you serious?
Yep.
I missed out on my 200 club tickets and I had a few mates that were quite angry with me that I didn't.
And I do not ask for tickets often. My dad, you know, has not spent much time at the MCG. I don't think my stepmom has ever been to the MCG and I can't get tickets. So everybody there on Friday night, enjoy.
That's wild. Well, that tells you if Abby can't get tickets.
Yes, then.
If you don't already have tickets, give up and just go watch it at a pub or at home on Friday night. Quick thought of the week from me, the 4:35 Saturday twilight slot. Mm-hmm. I think he's becoming the sexy slot in footy very quickly. Now, it's an interesting one, Abs. You work with Seven, obviously, but they have a massive say in the broadcast rights. But going into next year, Fox are going to have a fair chunk of Saturday night exclusively. Mm-hmm. There'll be an interest in them having a good 4:35 Saturday game as well, so that it leads into Saturday night, you know, and you're basically watching Fox footy all day on Saturday. But it's a good slot. Kids can play sport in the morning. You can go to the footy after that. You can get home and it's sort of, you know, 8:30, 9 o'clock. It's not too late. I don't ever think it'll be the prime time slot, but it's fast becoming a good one on the fixture.
I love a good sunset as well. 4:35, you know that you've got an hour and the sun's going to set over the ground. It's a beautiful time slot, no doubt about it. And you just hit the nail on the head though, families, kids. Mm-hmm. You know, if your team's playing at 7 p.m, 7:40, 7:50, whatever it might be on the Saturday night, that's really hard for young kids to go in and support and watch their team. But this one, yes, they're still going to have a little bit of a later night, but it does. It opens up the door for those families out there who do want to take their die-hard footy-loving kids.
Feels a little bit to me like 4:35 Saturday is the new 3:20 Sunday, I reckon.
Yes, I agree with that, yes. And you've also forgot to mention local footy finishes from about that 4:30 time slot. So they all go, and I know it might not be attendance at the ground, but coming off your local footy on a Saturday afternoon, even the twos players go straight to the G if they want after that. But everyone goes into club rooms, watches games, and that 4:30 time slot's always the first one on straight after your footy. So I think, for me, I agree with you, that's a real blockbuster. Could that be then an introduction to the AFL potentially in the future for a granny?
Don't do it.
Having that time slot, because I agree it's a massive draw card for them. Now, I heard this morning on the radio that potentially the AFL look at Carlton and Essendon games later in the year. In that time slot. And I've just been looking at a couple, like Essendon play Collingwood, Essendon play Geelong, Melbourne later in the year. And especially if we're Essendon are playing some good footy, Carlton playing great footy, you probably want to put those big blockbuster games at 4:30 at the G with big crowds getting drawn in.
If you've got any thoughts on whether the grand final should be night, day or twilight, please just tag Zacher on social media. Abs and I want nothing to do with that conversation.
No, do not come at me.
Just hit Zacher up directly. Let's talk North Melbourne. They, for all of the wrong reasons, are in the news week in, week out to start 2024. Thought Damien Barrett on AFL.com.au yesterday wrote a really interesting article on the culture side of North Melbourne. So, yes, we accept they're not winning games. And yes, we accept that their playing list is below standard right now and their results reflect that. But Damo wrote about the need to start with culture or to prioritise culture. And to do that, he named Scott Pendlebury as the man to go and get and have him play and have him start to repair culture. He also mentioned a guy like Callum Ward, if you can't land
Travis
Scott
Boak.
Pendlebury or Travis Boak. Yep. But it's a different take on things. And given that this is Players Day and that you two have been around successful cultures and you've also been around cultures that have struggled a little bit, what did you think of the article? And do you think that's something North Melbourne should prioritise?
Oh, I mean, if you're Scott Pendlebury sitting at home having your dinner and then all of a sudden your name's thrown out and you're brought into headlines, I'm sure he wouldn't have appreciated
it. For a potential $1.3 million a year is what Damo threw out there as well. So.
But there might have been a part of him going, I'm not going to bloody North Melbourne, no way.
I know.
So that's, you just get your name thrown in the headlines for no reason out of nowhere. But look, it's an interesting one. Obviously, the club is struggling and we've always been talking this year about North senior players aren't the ones standing up. So where do they stand in that culture area of the footy club? So Liam Shields is an older player, Hugh Greenwood's there. But really then there's the massive gap of, they've lost Jack Zeeble in the last couple of years. So there's a massive gap there of potentially to bring in older players. They're not a destination club. Now, I don't mean to sound that in a bad way. They're just, they're one of 10 teams in Victoria. It's not like you're going across to Perth to try and bring people there or up to Sydney or Brisbane, warmer climates in Australia. You're just another club in Melbourne that's not a big club. So to be that destination club, does it start with culture and then winning games and then you can bring players in? I'm not sure, but I just can't see unless you are a player that wants to get a $1.3, $1.4, $5 million deal, which a lot of players would be out there, unless you are, what is enticing you to go across to North Melbourne?
No, exactly right. And at the moment, they have not won a game this year. And when you ultimately look at success across the board and you look at list profile, it's that perfect blend of youth and experience and everybody consistently contributing. And you've touched on it, but it is. It's the young kids that you can see. You know, if you can lock them down for the next 10 years, amazing, because they are the shining lights of that football club at the moment. Harry Sheezel winning a best and fairest in his first year is the perfect example of that. But they are lacking the senior experience, like a Scott Pendlebury, that you just know week in, week out, that's what they're going to bring. And it's interesting because you look at what Brisbane's done as well. Like Luke Hodge, the perfect example, you know, at Hawthorn, what he managed to do there, and then going up to the Brisbane Lions to do exactly that, just to inject his leadership, his experience, his expectations on what you need on field, yes, but also off field, no doubt, driving standards at training and that kind of thing. So I certainly do think that North Melbourne are lacking that, and it's an area that they're going to need to fulfil.
Well, just on that, you mentioned Brisbane and Hodgie. So I looked at their list from 2015 to 2019, and we kind of get recency bias with Brisbane. Go, they're a successful club over the last 5 years. They made grand finals and made prelims. Where were they before that? So 2015 to 2018, that four seasons, Brisbane won 17 of 88 games in that window. Jeez. So pretty similar to North Melbourne right now, who've won 12 of 91. It's pretty similar.
Yeah.
They brought in the new coach in 2017, so Fags comes in then. Obviously, Clarko came in last year, so that's kind of split there. Then they went and recruited. So they picked up McCluggage and Rayner in the draft, pick one and three in 2016-17. North have got, I think we can all understand, Sheezel,
Wardlaw,
McKercher. So they've kind of got that down. But now is where Brisbane succeeded, where they bring in Joe Danaher, Charlie Cameron, Lachie Neal, and stole Link McCarthy from Geelong out of nowhere, and he's become an unbelievable player for them. So they're four players there that they've brought in. We're probably forgetting Birchall came in as well as a senior player. Can North bring in players like that? Brisbane used the destination club, come up North, especially with Joe Danaher. It's a quiet place, get out of the big footy city. Can North do something similar, or do they not have that draw card in them?
Well, that's a model that works,
isn't
it? It's proven. You've just hit the nail on the head there.
That's the interesting part, though, is that they don't have the climate and they're the smallest club in Victoria. Yes. So what is the selling point?
Selling point is your kids, is it? I don't know. Like, until they start potentially winning games and then players might go, well, a team's looking to make finals. So that can be a draw card as well, the successful side. But right now, it's really only money that.
Well, why can't it be money? I guess that's the thing. You have to pay a minimum amount of the salary cap.
Yep.
But there's nothing stopping you from paying as much as you want, just paying luxury tax.
Yes.
Like, no, I'm not saying that they should go miles over, but if you're really sold on a couple of people being key planks of rebuilding, why not pay them well overs to get them there?
Yeah. And I think that the people that you're looking at attracting have to have had success in the past, because you know that if you're 30 to 33, you're not going to North Melbourne to chase success.
Yep.
You need to have an aspect of, you know, that development mindset, the coaching mindset, something that you potentially might want to follow through with after you've finished your playing career. Scotty Pendlebury is the one that kind of fits that model beautifully, but somebody who's definitely already tasted success, because that's definitely not what they would be going to North Melbourne to finish their career in.
Yes, and then you start to look at the positions of the teams. I like their, like you said, their young midfielders. I think they can develop. They've got some good forwards. Their back line at the moment, again, not to put shade on anyone, but their back line's nowhere near up to AFL standard. And they got to then recruit potentially two key backmen or a really good solid lockdown defender and then a key fullback probably. So then that cuts your pull down even shorter. Yeah. You can't just get in anyone across the AFL. You need to be specific for your team. And I feel like they've drafted for mids and forwards. Where are their backmen going to come from? And I'm putting you on the spot. I'm not asking you for a direct player, but it's just in the AFL, who potentially could be between the age of 25 to 30 in that slot that could fit straight in, who you might have to pay $1.5 million for. Tom Barasta is linked to Sydney.
Yeah.
And obviously West Coast over there. A couple made the moves last year, Radaglia and Zerk Thatcher. So they've already moved.
So there's any Victorians that can bring home as well? That's a big draw card.
Yep.
And I guess the worry is that the ones that they bought in this year, so Dylan Stevens looks a total shadow of his former self.
Yep. Zach Fisher.
Zach Fisher's had no impact so far for North Melbourne. So
I gave him a 5-year deal.
You worry whether that scares them a little bit to kind of go, well, based on what we were just talking about, we went hard after a Zach Fisher, we went hard after a Dylan Stevens, and like you can mount an argument they should both be playing seconds at the moment.
Yep. Oh, that's the hard part. To be a list manager, how difficult would it be?
Yeah.
My goodness.
It's not easy, no.
Do you want to go there as like a cultural advisor, Zach?
Absolutely not.
You pull the boots on again, couldn't you?
Yeah, no. Don't want to get caught in that. I've had enough troubled times at Essendon. Don't want to do that.
We're not bringing them up again.
No.
If you're listening to us on Spotify, of course, hit the bell to be notified when we drop a new episode. Plenty more to come. Stay with us. This is Footy Talk. This is Footy Talk. If you want to get involved, it's an easy way to do it. Just send us a message on Instagram at @footytalk_pod. David Zaharakis, Abby Holmes, Jack Heverin. We've spoken about North Melbourne and like everyone else, we've tried to fix their woes. Let's get to a cool story, and that is the showdown on Thursday night. Daniel Curtin will make his debut on the biggest stage possible if you play for Adelaide or Port Adelaide. This is huge.
So exciting. Daniel Curtin, pick 8 in the 2023 draft, originally a Claremont boy in the Waffle. And Adelaide, they traded up big to get this guy. They had their eyes on him. They wanted him. They locked him down. And we get our first look at him on Thursday night. And as we know, there's something in the water over in South Australia at the moment, a number of significant injuries. So they've just ruled out Luke Pedler for the year with that shoulder that he sustained against North Melbourne. So he will join, you know, Paddy Parnell, Wayne Miller there on the sidelines, plus Rory Sloane's retirement, of course. And then from Port's perspective, Alia out with concussion, Sam Paupepa with the ACL. Remarkably, Connor Rosie's potentially available on Thursday. But I'm just excited for Daniel Curtin to you know, get his opportunity and, hopefully show us what he's made of on Thursday.
I love when coaches just put players in big games.
Yeah.
There's a few coaches over the years that just love putting them in. I think Sheeds always did, Anzac Day for players, just throw them in the deep end. I hope they don't put him as a sub. I hope it's just straight in there. Where does he play? What position is he? Do you know?
Probably third tall defender.
Third tall defender. I just love him if they put him straight in on the field. Don't put him as a sub. Just showdown, first clearance come out, Port Adelaide could get straight down there and he's just in the play. Yeah. That's what you love to see, big game moments, kids just making their debut and showing what they got.
No, it's exciting.
Do you remember your debuts, you two?
Well,
yeah, rising star, I had a good one.
Oh! Have a listen to him.
Do you know what?
What?
I knew that and I still had to ask him because he told me to ask him. No, he didn't.
I actually looked at
looked at your numbers and I thought, geez, this is a pretty good debut. Round 2 against Frio.
What were your numbers? You know them.
No, I don't know the end, but I know I had about 7 possessions in the first 5 minutes of the game. The ball just came out to the wing.
This is easy, isn't it?
I was hitting hitting up Lloydy and Scotty Lucas going, how good is this?
21 and a couple of goals, I reckon you kicked
as
well.
Oh, there we go. Yeah.
And then this guy's winning games on Anzac Day in his fourth game, as we all know.
I know. What about you, Abs?
AFLW, round one, season one. We were at Theberton Oval, packed it out, 12,000. Yep. We played GWS. It was a bit of a dicey lead-in for me. I wasn't sure if I was playing or if I wasn't playing. But then, yeah, when Bec Goddard gives you the news, it's always very exciting. And just to have so many, I guess, family members there, my grandparents there, my dad, being an SA girl originally, and donning the jumper of the club that you've known and loved and supported your entire life, that was a very special moment.
That was pretty cool moment for both of us to be able to do
that. Yes. Yeah, we both supported both the clubs that we played for, so yeah, that's nice.
No rising star nom for you?
No rising star for me. I think Aaron Phillips got it done that day.
Well, I mean, I'll let you go there. You said a couple of goals, but my first goal was Anzac Day, so I didn't kick any goals in the debut.
I thought you kicked a goal. There you go.
No, I actually hit the post, I think, my first shot on goal, so first kick, first poster. There's a club
you
want to be involved in.
That was your first goal, the Anzac Day one?
Yes.
In game four?
Well, yeah, I'm not trying to bring it up. I was just...
Yes, you were.
Yeah. Come on. Get
Anzac Day was last week. Come on, no. But yeah, the first kick was a poster. I think it was 10 metres out. So I got a free kick against Freo, 10 metres out, and I was shaking as much as I probably shaked ever in my career and hit the post. So it wasn't a good first kick for goal, 10 metres out directly in front. And yeah, shanked it.
He just prefers it in the wet, 45 out, bumped as he kicked in front of 90,000. That's how he prefers it. Just on Connor Rozee, Abs, you sort of... I could sense a bit of scepticism in your voice there when you said that Connor Rozee is going to play this week. I feel like you're not buying what they're selling.
Look, I'm not a medical professional. I've been in trouble for this before, so I'll come out here and say, please do not come for me, all of our listeners. I'm not a medical professional. But don't you find it a little bit strange that low-grade hamstring is the official diagnosis of what happened on Friday night? Low whatever. But are you potentially going to risk your captain for the next 4 to 5 weeks if something does go wrong, rather than just resting him for one game and potentially having him good to go next week? I don't know. I once again, not a medical professional, so they're obviously very confident and comfortable with him being available.
Yep.
But that makes me a little bit nervous.
Do you feel they're a little bit desperate after losing two players last week? Obviously, Rosie could be the third going into a big showdown. Could they be getting a little bit desperate?
The Port Adelaide medical staff would never risk him if they weren't 100% certain that he's good to go. But obviously, if you have your captain out as well as Alia and Sam Pelpepa, then that certainly hurts you across the ground. But I just found that very interesting. Even if it is low grade, that he wouldn't just miss a week just to ensure that he gets that right. But I don't know. I just feel if something does go wrong on Thursday night, there's going to be a lot of questions asked.
He's an explosive player too. So
yeah.
It's a big gamble. Speaking of injuries, Callum Mills has had a setback. We learnt this morning, calf tear running on the weekend. So it puts him back by a few weeks as well. So the Swans are top three without Callum Mills at the moment, but that's going to have to wait a couple of weeks.
Callum Mills, Luke Parker still
Parker and Dane Rampey's return this week for Battle of the Bridge.
So I think they'll get him through a test or... through that. Well, I think they had to this week or where they were selected for that. I think I heard that last night. But hopefully they're coming back. But the fact that they are with three key senior players and they're still in the top four in the AFL, it's scary for the competition.
Yeah.
I hope, and just on that, we haven't got this in a, I hope Sydney and Jonglom might keep Isaac Heaney in the middle once those two players come back.
Well, I think he has discussed that in his press conference this week, but it's going to be an interesting watch because you've got so many quality players coming back in.
Yep.
But with what Isaac Heaney has done in the first couple of months of this season, I think he needs to stay there.
He'd be leading the Brownlow, wouldn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Well, he's leading the coaches' votes. Yeah. About 20 or
something.
He's smashing it. So.
Let's finish with Chris Scott. We had him to talk about earlier in the show. We haven't got to him as yet. Is he streets ahead of everyone else right now? His winning percentage at 69% is as good as any in the history of Australian rules football from when this league started way back in the late 1800s. Finals 11 of 13 years, Abs. Two premierships 11 years apart. So 2011 and 2022. But it's the way that they're playing this year and the method in which they're beating teams that has got a lot of people starting to wonder whether he's coaching a different game to everyone else
right now. It's quite remarkable, isn't it, when you actually look at the numbers? So from his 316 games, 217 wins, as you said, 69%. But absolutely he is. Absolutely. He's now been at the helm for a number of years. Geelong have been super competitive throughout the entire time that he's been there. Yes, they haven't played finals last year and whatnot. But what I love about Chris Scott is that he's not scared to shake things up, and we're seeing that with the way they're playing this week. You know, they're not changing their game plan and then dropping back to being uncompetitive and having to work it out and rebuild. They've done it on the run. And some of the kids that he's got coming through, we spoke about this last week and how he's getting the best out of them. You know, and Boo Parfitt or Brandon Parfitt, you look at what he's doing this year, the kids, Tanner Bruin.
Dempsey,
yes. Yep. Like he's obviously created an environment down there where players and people flourish. And I think that he's paying dividends, and we're certainly seeing that roll out on the footy field.
You've hit the nail on the head there, I reckon. That culture piece, that why are they such a destination club that everyone wants to go down to?
The farmers.
The farmers want to go down there. But
the farmers want the life.
Yes, exactly. But when I was playing footy and now post footy, I just look at Geelong and the footy club and what you hear about the footy club, just look on with envy. The way Chris Scott looks like he handles himself around the players, the way the players love him, talk about him, the way you always heard about how their program was set up, great work-life balance, created an environment and atmosphere that players can flourish in, which a lot of clubs do struggle at. And Geelong have just seemed to find that balance where them and Sydney are the envy of the competition over the last 15 years, where if they have a little dip, they're straight back up, whether it be recruiting or changing your game plan a little bit. And what I love about when he won the flag in 22 was when he won it in 2011, a lot of talk was, that's Bombers list and that was kind of his flag and Scotty was just coming off the back of that. But he has proven in his 13 years, like you said, finals campaign in 13 years, he's proven that he is one of the best and if not the best coach in the AFL in the last 15 years. And now he's won his second flag and potentially looking at a third this year. But my thing is all what happens during the week with Chris Scott. I think he has been an outstanding coach in terms of running a football club and a football program that players want to be a part of.
I think he does. And he hands it over to the players. I think less of it is driven by the coaches and the hierarchy as such. But all of that expectation is put on the players to know what they need to do day in, day out. And then you've got the leaders who have been there for a long period of time. You look at Tom Hawkins, Joel Selwood, Paddy Dangerfield now. They're the leaders who drive it. There's no doubt about that. But it takes a certain player and a certain person to go down there, embrace it and say, right, well, the onus is on me. The onus is on me to get it done. All the extras that I need to do, whether it's ball handling or, you know, prehab, rehab, that kind of thing, get it done on your own time, which allows you to have that perfect work-life balance and, allows Jeremy Cameron to sit on his tractor for a few more hours each week.
And do Instagram videos with cows and all that sort of stuff. If they go 8-0 to start the season.
Oh, yes.
Wow, look out. They will be red-hot favourites to win the whole thing. Now, you and I are at the footy all weekend, Abs. That's just kind of what we sign up for
in
our game. What are you doing on the weekend, Mr. Zaharakis?
Yes, I'm flying to Port Macquarie tomorrow to do my second Ironman event up there in New South Wales. Potentially under a big flood, though, so interesting. Yeah.
So for all of our Footy Talk listeners, it's quite remarkable what is involved in an Ironman. Just run through that again quickly.
Yeah, so on Sunday morning, I'll be doing a 3.8K swim, 180K bike, and then a 42.2K run.
That's just ridiculous.
It makes me feel sick thinking about it.
So, but yeah, around that 10-hour mark, hopefully. Looking forward to it.
You're going to kill it.
Oh, hopefully.
I'll track you.
Yes.
Let me know your number and I'll follow you on the little app.
I'll let you know my number and I'll put it out on Instagram for people to follow. But yeah, I did my first Ironman in December in Busselton in WA and then, now off to Port Macquarie. So looking forward to it very much.
Good luck.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Abs, I'll see you at the footy on the weekend.
See you there.
Thanks for being with us on Footy Talk. Tomorrow, Daisy and Heater are back. They're going to take a good look at the showdown, of course, Carlton and Collingwood. And this should get very interesting. If you think that Daisy and Heater were loose enough, Cam Zerha going to join them on the show tomorrow as well. Genuine Reptilian Radio. That's coming up tomorrow on Footy Talk.
Listener.